welcome back to the Pinstripe Podcast. I am yet again alone. Scotty and I need to work on our schedule for recording, as that kiddo's got 3 classes on Thursdays. And guys, I'm going to be honest, I'm currently sitting in what looks like a makeshift campsite. I look like I'm on the run from the FBI, because I don't know if we touched on this last week, but I am moving. Tonight is my last night in my current apartment. So I'm sitting here on an air mattress, staring at very, very blank walls and without Scotty. So the inspiration is thin, but we've got a lot to talk about between waivers and prospects getting called up. So I'm not going to say my thoughts are going to be the most organized, but they're going to be present. Let's head back to earlier this week and see kind of where news starts. Let me grab my first screenshots here. Something that I did want to make a note of is how some people in our offense actually seem to be like semi showing up. Namely, DJ LeMahieu. Sorry, totally spaced because we have not said anything about that man all year. DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres has had a really, 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 really great August in terms of, you know, the Yankees in general. And it's showed. I mean, again, the Yankees are not doing great, but I did want to notice that this week. I noticed DJ had a few home runs. Gleyber has also had a few home runs. And that's nice to see that, you know, they still have a pulse, especially, you know, DJ's in the middle of a contract. Gleyber is always a talk for trades. So it's good to see. Now, I'm going to be honest, we're going to get right to the moving parts of the Yankees. Starting with, this happened on Tuesday, and I don't think I have had this much joy run through me where I couldn't let it out anywhere in a very long time. The Yankees released Josh Donaldson from the roster. You know, they kept on saying that he was going to be returning from the IL in September with, I believe, some sort of hamstring injury. But instead, they released him, which was thrilling and exciting and just, in my brain, perfect. He did end up today on Thursday receiving a minor league contract from, ooh, sorry about that noise coming from my mouth, not my words. He received a minor league deal from Milwaukee. The thing that blows my mind is how he is still always marketed, and this is how he's marketed to the Yankees. He's marketed as former American League MVP. Let me quadruple check when he was MVP, because I'm going with it was not soon. When was Josh, can't spell. When was Josh Donaldson MVP? 2015. Okay, earlier I said 2013. But he had an MVP season with the Toronto Blue Jays in 2015. But his production has dipped dramatically. 2 hours ago from ESPN. Who wrote this? Who did it? Who done it? Just give me the author. Oh my God, came from Associated Press. Wow. Just to give you some stats, if you haven't been able to recognize how absolutely garbage bazingos Josh Donaldson has been, the 37-year-old has hit .207, 25 homers and 77 RBIs over 165 games in 2 seasons since the Yankees acquired him, along with infielder / outfielder Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and catcher Ben Rodovit in a March 2022 deal that sent catcher Gary Sanchez and the biggest heartbreak, infielder Gio Urshela, to the Minnesota Twins. Neither of them, in case we were unaware, are still on the Twins. Gary's Padre and Gio is currently on the IL with a fractured hip, but he is with the Los Angeles Angels, whom we'll talk about soon. But who would have thought that the best piece, looking at it currently, to come out of that trade would be IKF, right? Ben Rodovit has become semi-present in the Major League Club. I'm not going to say he's relevant. I'm not going to say he's important, but he has played. But Josh Donaldson I would love to say I wish him the best, but I really don't give a fuck, if I'm being completely honest. After that, Tuesday night, the Yankees placed one player on waivers, and that was Harrison Bader. Let me grab Harrison Bader's stats, because I'm pretty sure he has not offensively done spectacular for the Yankees as of recently. But I'm trying to, yeah, there it is. MLB.com can let me pick. In his last seven games, In his last seven games, he has 20 at-bats, one hit, one walk, seven strikeouts for an average of .05. Last 15 games, he was hitting .106. Last 30 games, .210. Right? So, you know, defensively, gold glove outfielder. When he was hot, he did really great. Right? When he came back in the playoffs last year, he did really well. When he came back from injury this year, he started off with a bang and seemed to be the only, like, pulse that the team had. But he's really, 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 really not performed since about a month, 2 months. And, you know, is this stopping the bleeding for the Yankees? No, not at all. Harrison Bader was not the biggest problem in that clubhouse. But I guess we took a step. Was it the right step? Who's to say? But it was a step. With that, the Reds ended up claiming Harrison Bader along with Hunter Renfroe, who I'll get to soon, was a part of a big waiver run from the Angels. But let's talk, I've only got a few other Yankee things here, which are really exciting, and they're all about our young talent, our prospects, and the Yankees seeming to actually do something with them. So it started with Spencer Jones, our current and new number one top prospect, being promoted to AA, which is kind of huge. He was the 22-year-old was a first rounder out of Vanderbilt by the Yankees in 2022. And in case you wanted to know how he has done in high A this year, in 100 games, he posted a 787 OPS with 13 home runs. I wish Scotty was here to talk about this guy, but we talked about him when we were, when we drafted him. He's like a second coming of Aaron Judge. He's a 6'3", 6'4" outfielder, and not like Ellie De La Cruz and like tiny skinny outfielder, like a built like Aaron Judge outfielder, weight wise. So that kind of showed that there had to be something moving around, right? And what ended up happening is that the hot rumor on the street is that the Yankees are making lots and lots of moves for Friday, in that the Martian, Jason Dominguez, who is our number two prospect, along with Austin Wells, our number eight prospect, should be getting the call up against the Houston Astros, which is very exciting. Sure, it could just be, okay, it's September, it's a crapshoot, we have no shot, why not? But it is very exciting none the same, because if you remember back to spring training, right, everybody's eyes were on who was playing shortstop. You know, is it IKF? It was never going to be IKF. Is it going to be Volpe, or is it going to be Peraza? But the secret other race that was going on was the left field position, right? Aaron Hicks was pretty sure it was his to be lost. Oswaldo Cabrera gave it a really, really solid go and got the starting position, although he ended up muffing it and not being able to hit for a while. But someone who was heavily, heavily in that conversation was Jason Dominguez. You know, we've been hearing about Jason Dominguez for what feels like ever, right? He's not just another outfielder. He is the second coming of Mike Trout is what we've been told pretty much, is that he is a five-tool exceptional outfielder. I have seen Jason Dominguez hit a baseball. Can confirm he hits that baseball very hard. And he's very fast. But it is just going to be very, very exciting. And let's not forget Austin Wells. If you are, oh, why do I recognize that name? What he's a catching prospect. And he was the guy that fixed Anthony Volpe's swing. Anthony Volpe sat down with Austin Wells, and I believe one other player, I just can't think of who it was, over some chicken parm subs and fixed his swing. And now, not to get ahead of myself, but to get ahead of myself, Anthony Volpe today became the first Yankee rookie to record a 20-homer, 20-steal season as he hit a 3-run home run against the Detroit Tigers in the 9th inning today. Right, so we've now got what our former number one prospect, Anthony Volpe, our number two prospect, Jason Dominguez. I believe Oswald Peraza was our number three prospect. Everson Pereira was probably five or six. And I believe seven is Trey Sweeney. Although now, obviously, our number one is Spencer Jones. And our number eight prospect in Austin Wells, right? We've done the thing that me and Scotty have talked so often that the Yankees won't do. And that is trust young people. Of course, they're putting them in a position where if they fail, it doesn't matter because the Yankees are doo-doo garbage. But it's still an opportunity for them to see major league pitching, right? Dominguez and Wells got maybe 2 weeks, a week and a half at AAA ball. Pereira was up there a little bit longer. Peraza was up there a while. Volpe got like 2 weeks there. It's very, very, very exciting, and I'm actually looking forward to tuning into the Yankee game tomorrow. Even if they lose, even if we look like shit, I don't care because they're playing. And that's a really fun thing to see. Let's hop into some stuff going on around the league. I think one thing I don't want to talk about that. There was a shooting at the Chicago White Sox game, but apparently, actually, no, let's talk about it. There was a shooting at the Chicago White Sox game on Sunday night or Saturday. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is, how does this happen? Apparently, allegedly, the woman brought the gun in underneath the fat on her belly. The bullet grazed her and shot another woman. I am trying to understand how that happened, because when I have gone to many games, but I've gone to games at Fenway the most, simply because of geographically that's where I am. I have to walk through a metal detector, and like sometimes if I have like too many rings on, the metal detector goes off. How does that work? How did that happen? Thankfully, the woman is okay. She was shot in the leg, and then the woman that was grazed, who brought the gun in, declined medical attention. It's just, you don't understand how these things happen. And I think that was just like of all places for it to happen with the White Sox, after they've now currently named a new GM, which was the, I don't have his name, but he was the head of the player operations, I believe, is now their GM. But after, you know, being told that the organization has no organization in it, it's wild that you see that it's seen in every part of the club. We've got a little bit of tea on the Shohei Ohtani situation. Now, if you remember last week, Scotty and I are, rightfully so, a little, what's the word? We don't trust clubs all the time. Oh, I know the word that I'm looking, cynical. In a sense of, is this team actually telling me the truth? Have I been given all of the information? Are they actually looking after the players? And we said that around Shohei Ohtani, of how a lot of his starts before his injury, he tore his UCL, he needs Tommy John. you know, what were the angels taking care of him, or were they just continuing to put him out and put him out and put him out and put him out? According to Jeff Fletcher, Perry Manassian, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, just revealed that the angels offered to do an MRI on Otani's arm after his cramping episode earlier this month, and Otani and his agent refused because they didn't think it was necessary. I know that Scotty and I talked about that cramping, and it's interesting because that quote is very important, because you knew that Otani could have, if he wanted to, used that as a vehicle of, oh, I don't want to stay with the Angels. Look at what you've done to me. I don't have any guilt going somewhere else. Or he could have, there's a plethora of things. It could have turned people really, really against the Angels. But for that to come out and for the Angels to kind of cover their butt like that, like, hey, we tried to take care of him and he denied it. Interesante. Otani, I believe, is still hitting with his torn UCL. I believe he saw a second opinion in New York. There's been no update regarding that, but again, just something very curious to look at. The Cleveland Guardians also DFA'd Noah Syndergaard. He had a rough outing in Toronto, and he had a 650 ERA this year. It's wild to see, oh, how the mighty have fallen. You know, he was lights out as a Met. It's all right between there. He wasn't good as a Dodger. I believe he was a Angel and a Philly. I'm not completely positive about the Philly, but I knew he was an Angel. I think he was pretty good as an Angel. It's just, it's wild to see the crumbling of what could have been. Not completely relevant, but just something that I think is fun is that Joey Votto is interested in playing in 2024. There's a $20 million club option for him to stay next season. Let me just check out what he's doing. The Reds are just a very exciting team, and I don't blame him for wanting to stay another year. Why not watch those guys? He's currently batting 200 with 13 home runs, 33 RBIs, and 34 hits. He is 39. But he apparently entered this is from The Athletic, so I don't know how much of this I'm going to be able to read. He was placed on the Wednesday before August 24th. Sorry, let me try to finish out where I am here. Figure out where I am here. Sorry. Scotty normally finds this stuff. Okay, so on August 23rd, he was put on the IL with left shoulder fatigue. And it is true, right? Have we seen he wants to stay? But how much do you know, is he worth $20 million to keep? Or as you continue to just drag up rookie after rookie after rookie after rookie, you know, is there room for a 40-year-old on that roster? Because he is, yes, now Ellie De La Cruz is the Reds, right, quote unquote. But for longevity-wise and culture-wise, Joey Votto is the Reds. And he's a really great guy for baseball. He's kind of a freaky deaky dude, but like in a fun way. And it's interesting. It's something to definitely keep an eye on. And I'm both ways, right? I love the youth movement in organizations, especially the Reds organization. But also you do need, when you have that group of people of young kids, it's all their rookie years, first 2 years, you need someone to kind of direct and lead that. Sorry. AAA reboot robot strike zone will get slightly bigger starting Tuesday, and the pitch clock will be altered. What does that mean? Interesting. But Joey Votto will be a storyline to keep on the lookouts, because if he does, I was about to say graduate. If he graduates, if he retires, you know, it'll be a fun career to look back on. But if he if he does, then it's sad that he didn't get, like, the right. Miguel Cabrera's tour this year has been fantastic. It's been so fun to see him visit all of these ballparks and all of these teams celebrate him in individual ways and see guys like Oswaldo Cabrera, Peraza, and Pereira, for us at least, got, like, emotional playing on the field with... I just blanked on his name. I was thinking Dominic Fike in my head, who's a musician. Miguel Cabrera. Whoa. So, you know, you hope that Votto can have a similar experience, but also understand that sometimes the team just doesn't believe that. And I agree with both sides. The next thing I'm going to talk about is this really weird set of information that I've gotten over the last few days regarding Pete Alonso. So it started on Sunday night where the Mets apparently were likely to trade Pete Alonso. And then it was like the Mets likely to trade anybody who is anywhere, you know, not who it was like anybody who's not in contract through 2024. And then on Wednesday, I get a note that Mets players want to keep Pete and that at least a handful of players plan to meet with Steve Cohen to discuss extending Pete Alonso. And now, today, earlier on Thursday, there are strong expectations that Pete Alonso will remain with New York in 2024 despite trade rumors. You know, he was loosely on the chopping block this year. Then again, so were all of the Mets. And I think, you know, I think that's the one thing, objectively as a non-Met fan, that makes Steve Cohen very exciting and, like, a fun guy to watch own a team, is when he cares so fucking much about the Mets that he's willing to listen to players and he's willing to do what has to be done. But also, like, he's just making these decisions, like, willy-nilly. He's like, yeah, we'll sell him. Oh, we'll buy him. Oh, we'll trade him. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you don't think about your actions before you do anything, which is fine. Totally chill. Totally cool. But I think that that's still something that we have to keep an eye on, because I would not be surprised if Cohen still got rid of Pete. And he will have many a prospect feeding and to exchange for Pete Alonso. Bear that no mind. And, you know, there are teams that would probably love a little bit of a first base upgrade with one of the better power hitters in the National League, even across baseball. So I think that is something to keep an eye on. I think one thing that I was never expecting to see this year is that Edwin Diaz believes that he is nearing a return and says his goal is to pitch this season. And Buck Showalter says that the Mets will let him pitch if he's healthy. For those who don't remember what happened to Edwin Diaz was a part of, I want to make sure that I pick the correct country before I say this. Yes. Edwin Diaz was playing on the Puerto Rican World Baseball Classic team and fractured his kneecap. Now I got it. Now I got to type that all back in. Edwin. Let's see. Yes, he suffered a complete right patellar tendon tear during the World Baseball Classic on March 16th. It was after celebrating after winning against, I believe, the DR? Yes, following their win over the Dominican Republic in Wednesday night's Win or Go Home World Baseball Classic. It's just interesting that the Mets are just such a funky organization to watch, right? They trade away Scherzer, they trade away Verlander, they get rid of Mark Canna. Again, not in the same league as the other two, but just a part of the group that they got rid of. But they're like, if Diaz wants to pitch, we'll let Diaz pitch. I don't think he's going to. I think they're going to say that now, and he's not going to pitch. But still something kind of fun and funky to watch. In terms of the DR, let's just touch on this really quick before I go anywhere else. From Jeff Passan, quote, big news from my colleague at Juan Rico M. Prosecutors in the Dominican Republic are investigating a second formal complaint lodged by an underage girl against Tampa Bay Rays shortstop Wander Franco. Now we're looking into three allegations. Mans is not playing baseball again. I'm sorry. He's not. I'm not sorry, actually. Let me shut the fuck up right now. I'm not sorry. He's disgusting and terrible, and I hope he rots. Moving on. Sorry, I just overwhelmed myself by saying all that, but I'm not wrong. Some other players who hit waivers is what's going on with the Los Angeles Angels. The Angels placed Lucas Giolito, Matt Moore, Ronaldo Lopez, Hunter Renfro, and Randall Grichuk on waivers. You know, I think that this was... So, right, for the Angels, this is all information from Jeff Passan. I'm going to read his tweets right now, and then we're going to talk about it, okay? Jeff Passan says, for the Angels, this will be a pure salary dump because there are no longer any August trades. All they will get from this transaction is salary relief. Teams that claim the players will need only pay their salaries for the rest of the season. Who gets the players will be determined by reverse order of record, which I did not know. I didn't know the process of how claiming someone off of waivers worked. The team will be with the worst record that puts in a claim on a player will receive him, and there are going to be plenty of claims put in from playoff caliber teams that need a starter, bullpen help, and bats. And pick up, they did. The Reds also picked up Hunter Renfro, like I said earlier, and the Cleveland Guardians claim Lucas Giolito, Matt Moore, and Ronaldo Lopez off of waivers. You know, they thought that they had a chance. They thought they did. And then it was very clear that they, in fact, did not. I've got two final things here, and then we can boogie-woogie on out of here. The one is with steal number 60, Ronald Acuña Jr. is now one home run away from the first 30 home run, 60 stolen base season ever.
Hi, everyone. It's Friday morning Lexi recording on her computer microphone, so I apologize for the dip in audio quality. But Ronald Acuña Jr. actually hit a grand slam about 20 minutes after I finished recording, so he has now become the first player for a 60-30 season. I'm going to go on a little rant here about how it's impossible to think that he wouldn't do it, but you know what? Here we are.
Because there are only four players with 20 home run and 60 stolen base seasons, and that is Ricky Henderson, Joe Morgan, Eric Davis, and Ronald Acuña Jr. If you don't think that Ronald Acuña Jr. will hit a home run between today and the end of the season, you're coked out stupid dumb, just gonna be honest. So that'll be very, very, very fun to see. And he's just so freaking fun to watch play baseball, dude. I fucking love the Braves. They're so... I was, like, explaining to a friend of mine that the Braves are my favorite National League team, and he was telling me that I can't do that. First of all, hush. Second of all, he doesn't even watch baseball that much. Third of all, I can do whatever I want. Fair and simple. It's not like I'm like, my favorite team is the Yankees, and then my second favorite team is the Houston Astros or the Boston Red Sox. No. My favorite team is the New York Yankees, and then my second favorite team is the Atlanta Braves. And I've been saying this. We've been talking about this since before they were super good. This is the year before they won the World Series. I have loved the Braves. And not just because, ooh, they're good at baseball. Yeah, they're fucking good at baseball. But their structural ability to build a team and get these guys to sign contracts that are both player beneficial because they're on a winning team and fiscally beneficial to the club. Cuckoo wild bananas. I don't know why I keep listing things like that. But that's going to be very fun to see. My last thing is just an update on, right, this is a season with lots of rule changes, lots of changes to speeding up the game, hoping to boost attendance and watch time. And Jeff Passan gave us a stat about Friday night. Our Lord and Savior, Jeff Passan, says, on Friday night, there were 4,319 pitches thrown across the major leagues. and for the first time on a day with a full slate of 15 games, there were zero pitch clock violations. Attendance is up 9.2%. Game time is down 25 minutes to 2 hours and 39 minutes. The rule changes are a rousing success. I think it's huge that there are no pitch clock violations. That's crazy. I genuinely didn't know if we were ever going to get to a point like this, especially across all 15 games. That means that 30 teams played. That means all the teams played. Whoa. And nobody violated the pitch clock. Attendance up 9.2% is huge. It's crazy. And, you know, the first response is the last piece to the puzzle. Somebody, RB Hockey, says, just end blackouts and we're good. And they're 100% right. That's the last piece of, like, barring people from experiencing baseball. And it's just really, really, really fun to see. As a baseball fan, as a genuine fan of the sport, it's great to see it being successful. And I'm glad that the rule changes that, right, Scotty and I were both supporters and anti of, to see it going well. Because I did genuinely want to see it succeed. And it doesn't, the game doesn't feel different, at least for me. It doesn't substance-wise feel different. It feels enhanced because I'm actually experiencing more game than not game, and I'm not hesitant to go or sit down and watch because it's like, oh god, what if I get to the sixth inning and then I have to do something or I have to go somewhere, or like I have things to do but the Yankees are playing, I have to take 4 hours out of my day to watch it. No, I don't. I can take 2 hours out of my day. The way the Yankees are currently playing, god, we can take an hour and 40 minutes out. It's made baseball something that you can, that's an event that's approachable every day. It used to be, the Yankees have a game today. Let me build my schedule or look at my schedule to see if I can even really enjoy this game. Because what do I get from tuning in from innings 3 to 6, 3 to 7, right? Yeah, maybe the Yankees win, but you don't get a feel of the game. So I'm very happy. I'm proud that we've done this and it's going successfully. But that's all I've got for you this week. Scotty has made some really, really stunningly beautiful graphics over on our Instagram at pinstripe.podcast for the call-ups. His Everson Pereira one, like, still is living, like, rent-free in my brain. It was beautiful, and I think you guys should all go check it out. And you should also follow the show on whatever platform you're listening to, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, whichever one it is. Give us a follow. Thank you so much for listening. I greatly appreciate anybody who comes every week. And I'm Lexi, and this has been the Pinstripe Podcast. Bye.